Okay, we're in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 8 through 12. Peter is writing from Rome, and he's writing to the churches that are in what's known as Asia Minor or modern Turkey. And the year is AD 64. Caesar Nero is beginning to ramp up his persecution of Christians back in Rome, which is where Peter is. The believers in Rome are facing all kinds of horrible things, torture, being burned alive, death by animals in the Colosseum. And so we have seen these three themes woven throughout the book. We've seen the theme of suffering. We're going to get more into that in the upcoming weeks. Submission, which oddly enough is Peter's suggestion of how we handle suffering, submission. And then thirdly, we would be calling this last thing relational evangelism, because if I handle my difficulties correctly, people will wonder what in the world is up with you. Why do you smile all the time? How can you handle what you're going through like this? And they're going to find out about Jesus. So chapter 3, verse 8 through 12, I'm calling this section the blessing, and you'll see why by the end, I hope, if I haven't gone to sleep on you, I don't know. No, if you haven't gone to sleep on me. Oh, that's right. Verse 8, finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tender-hearted, be courteous. We'll just stop there. When he says finally, now see, the problem is that some of us preachers, we say finally about 20 minutes before we actually end the service. Now see, Rosalie's nodding her head. Yes, you know those of us that do this. I tried that before. It's a trick sometimes we throw in because we don't want you to know that we aren't going to end anytime soon, so we want you to keep hanging on, and we throw this out. We can probably blame all this on Peter, because he says finally halfway through his message. So it's really biblical to say finally in the middle of your message. The word finally is the Greek word telos, which can mean the end or the aim or the purpose of things. Peter isn't finishing his letter here. He's finishing his ideas on submission, because he's pretty much done with submission. There'll be a little snippet when we get to chapter 5, but he's pretty done with submission. And so he's summing it all up. He's giving you the aim, finally. Why are we talking about submission? It's this. He's talked about submission to the government, to masters, to husbands, and he's summing it all up now in these next two verses. These next two verses are the summary of what it's all about. And then verses 10, 11, and 12, he's going to give you his documentation of where he comes up with these crazy ideas. You got it? You know, when you're writing your college papers, you're supposed to put a footnote and show where you get things from. Well, that's 10 through 12. But verses 8 and 9 are his summation of what submission's supposed to be, the aim, the purpose. If you don't understand what we're going to do in these first two verses, you're going to have a hard time with submission. It just won't make sense. It's just stupid. It's horrible. But verses 8 and 9 tell us what it's supposed to look like on the outside. He says, verse 8, be of one mind. Be of one mind. If you're following along in the app, because in the app under media, and then you go to study notes, you'll get today's notes. Be of one mind. The fill in the blank there, I'm going to call this first lesson, unity. He says, be of one mind. Homophrone is the Greek word. So homo means same, and phrone is a form of the word for mind. To be of one mind, harmonious, or live in harmony. Now, he's not saying that we all have to be like robots, and we all have to look alike, and we have to think alike. That's not what he's saying. It's about a unity that will come from humility, which is putting others before yourself. You're going to see this word in Philippians chapter 2, verse 2. Paul writes, then make me truly happy by agreeing wholeheartedly with each other, loving one another, working together, there it is, with one mind. and purpose. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. You're going to see this woven through this message this morning, this concept of humility, putting others in front of yourself. Now, in the Lord of the Rings movie, Fellowship of the Ring, there's a spot in the movie where all the heroes are gathered together to talk about this evil ring that's supposed to be taken back to Mordor. Do you remember that? Do you remember that movie? And all of the heroes are arguing about how impossible it is. It's terrible. It's horrible. And I'm certainly not going to do it. Try to read the subtitles. They're all arguing.
I will take the ring to Mordor. Though I do not know the way.
I will help you bear this burden, Frodo Baggins, as long as it is yours to bear.
By my life or death,
and you have my bow.
And my axe.
Carry the face of us all, little one. If this is indeed the will of the council, then Gondor will see it done.
Hey! Mr. Frodo's not going anywhere without me.
No, indeed, it is hardly possible to separate you, even when he is summoned to a secret council, and you are not.
Wait! We're coming too! I have to send this all tied up in a sack to stuff it.
Anyway, you need people of intelligence on this sort of mission. Quest. Thank you.
Well, that rules you out.
Nine companions.
So be it. You shall be the Fellowship of the Ring.
Right. Where are you going?
Unity doesn't mean that we're all the same. Hey, some of us might be hobbitses. Some of us might be dwarves, elves, men. We're all different people, different strengths, different weaknesses. We don't look the same. We may argue at times, but we are united in one thing. We have one thing in common. We have one fellowship. We're all different parts of the body of Christ, but we all follow the same King. We're on the same mission. Unity of mind. Be of one mind. He says, secondly, having compassion for one another. Having compassion for one another. I'm titling this lesson sympathetic. That's because the Greek word that he uses, having compassion on one of another, sumpathes, it means to suffer with. Sum means with. Pathes or pathos comes from the word to suffer, pasco. Suffering or feeling with another. What do they say in Spanish? Simpático, something like that. I don't know. That's like my freaky Spanish. I don't know Spanish. Don't try speaking it to me. Am I close? Oh, thank you. Thank you. We've got some experts in here. You know, it's interesting to get people together who have been through similar circumstances. Can you see the picture? Two men have lost their legs, a leg. When I hear people's stories, and sometimes it'll happen outside after the service, and people come up to me or get to know them. Some of it maybe you'll see when if you come to the New Year's Eve thing. We'll spend time around the tables getting to know each other. And you'll hear people's stories. And I hear what people have gone through. I know what some of you have gone through because you told me. And one of the things I love to do is I love to put my hand on them and say, you know, you should talk to that person. Because I haven't gone what you're going through. I haven't gone through what you're going through, but they have. Simpatico, sympathes, have compassion. Because nobody has compassion more than somebody who has gone through exactly what you've gone through. Ultimately, Jesus knows us best. He knows what we're going through. Hebrews 2:18 says, since he himself has gone through suffering and testing, he is able to help us when we are being tested. He knows what you're going through. He has suffered all things, yet without sin. So he gets it. Even if you haven't been through what somebody's been through, we ought to work at learning to feel what others have felt, even if we haven't gone through what they've gone through. Sometimes we can make the mistake of having compassion with everybody else around us except those who are closest to us. I've made that mistake many, many times. Do you know what your spouse is going through? Are you aware of where they struggle? What difficulties they're facing? How about your parents? How about your parents? Do you know what they're facing? How about, we talked a few weeks back about masters and slaves, and we talked about bosses and slaves, because that's what you are when you work for a boss, you're a slave, right? How about your boss? Do you know what your boss is going through? When it comes to submission, it's a whole lot easier if you work at this, simpatico. He says to love as brothers, verse 8. And I'm going to call this lesson good brothers. I'm going to qualify this. I'm going to call it good brothers. The word love as brethren is philadelphos. It means loving like a brother. Phileo is to love. Autophos is the team that Bryce Harper plays for. No, that's Philadelphia, sorry. I'm tired. Second service. I'm going to say strange things. For some folks I know, loving someone like your brother doesn't sound too good because siblings aren't always nice to each other. Let's turn it up. There are two children in that suit. You know, this is trouble. That's a smart brother. He's going at it with scissors.
You love your brother?
Yeah, take him down. Okay. So you understand why I said good brothers? Okay, good brothers. Love as brothers. You know, in most healthy families, there's usually one person you count on, your brother, your sister. John tells us that loving God and loving your fellow believer or your brother go hand in hand. 1 John 4:20. If someone says, I love God, and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this commandment we have from him, that he who loves God must love his brother also. Our love for one another is a big part of our witness to the world, who we belong to. John 13:34, Jesus said, so now I am giving you a new commandment. Love each other just as I have loved you. You should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. Love as brothers. He says next in verse 8, be tender-hearted. And I'm going to call this lesson, have a heart. Have a heart. The word tender-hearted is eusplanknos. Eusplanknos. Eu means good or well. Splanknos means your bowels. Now, I could start some potty jokes here about good bowels or something like that, or have strong bowels, but to be compassionate or tender-hearted. Our modern culture, we get this idea that feelings all come from your heart. You know, I love you with all my... Right. Ancients don't do that. They'd say, I love you with all my gut, or with all my bowels. We still use the phrase, I have a gut feeling, so we kind of bring it into our culture a little bit. I think this insight into Christian love, being tender-hearted, shows us that healthy relationships in the church ought to involve feelings. Because sometimes some of us preachers make such a point about agape being a choice. You choose to value somebody, and we ignore the fact that there are feelings that we ought to have for one another, healthy feelings. Sometimes we get to thinking that Christian love is all about the brain, has nothing to do with our heart. Eusplanknos is all about the heart. Paul links eusplanknos with being tender-hearted. So he links to this. Instead, be kind to each other, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God through Christ has forgiven you. The word forgive is the Greek word for grace. Forgiveness shouldn't be something that someone earns for you to give it. It ought to be something that you give as a grace. They don't deserve it. I also want to just draw a little line here. I think it's okay that maybe we hold off on trusting someone until they're trustworthy. I've heard grace abused sometimes where people say, well, you just have to forgive me because you're a Christian. You have to forgive me. And that means you have to let me move back in the house and steal all your money and drive your car and all this kind of stuff. No, I don't think so. I think we can forgive somebody, but still not trust them. Jesus was motivated by his gut with splanknos. It says in Matthew 9:36, but when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them. He was moved with compassion because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. He had compassion on people. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. There's so many people to reach. Therefore, pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. Be tender-hearted. He says next, lastly in verse 8, to be courteous. And I'm going to call this lesson good manners. It's not a bad thing to learn good manners. Not a bad thing to learn good manners. I have a video I dug up. The date's from 1954. I'm not sure anybody in this room would have seen this in junior high, which is probably when they showed it. But hey, this is good stuff. Watch, take notes.
We see good manners every day. Not only among us, but among children, too. Often they may not even realize that the consideration they're showing for others might be called good manners. Wherever you go, you'll always find that good manners keep things running smoothly. Paying attention to a neighbor's yard is good manners because it's considerate. So is going to the end of the line instead of trying to break into the middle. It's only fair to those who were there before you. Introductions are good manners because they're friendly and help people be at ease with each other. And good manners at the table make for a pleasant and comfortable meal. Such things as coming to the table with clean hands and face, passing food properly, and pleasant conversation make mealtime enjoyable for the whole family. Yes, you see good manners wherever there are people who respect each other and want to get along with others.
Yeah, but really, in reality, this is what today looks like. I think I'm negotiating with Daniel and Manny to have that first film shown to the youth. What do you think? No, yeah, you can stop shaking, nodding. It's okay. Some modern translations use words like humility and humble there. And I think there's even a connection between humility and courteous. When you cultivate humility, you learn to think about others before yourself. Verse 9, he says, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. Not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling. The word return actually carries the idea of payback. Payback. Don't do payback. When someone does something bad to you, you don't play tit for tat with them and do something back in return. When someone hurls insults at you, you don't reply with an insult. So, Olga and Sven have been fighting all their married life until Olga one day says, Sven, we've been fighting and fighting these many years. I think we should pray about this together. And when they kneel down to pray, Olga interrupts Sven before he has even three words out. And then she says, Dear God, Sven and I have been fighting and fighting these many years. It is time that one of us should go to heaven. And then I can go and live with my mother. You got to think about that one. Did that go over your head? You want me to say it again? No, I don't. Okay. It says, on the contrary, verse 9, on the contrary, a blessing. I call the lesson here, blessing others. Some of us aren't quite sure what it means to bless others. Maybe it's somebody sneezes and you say, Gesundheit, or bless you, or something like that. During holidays, families often get together, and sometimes someone is asked to say the blessing.
Before we begin, since this is Aunt Bethany's 80th Christmas, I think she should lead us in the saying of grace.
Oh, great.
What, dear?
Grace!
Grace! She passed away 30 years ago.
They want you to say grace. The blessing!
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The word blessing in Greek is eulogeo, which means to say nice, something nice. But it means to praise, to ask God's blessing on a thing. Peter says that when someone causes us trouble, we ought to bless them. And that kind of goes against our nature. When someone causes me trouble, I want to cause them trouble back. Maybe even twice as hard, something like that, you know. my favorite. Oh, no. This is my favorite. So Peter says, don't return reviling for reviling or doing evil for, don't return tit for tat, but contrarywise, a blessing. The disciples struggled with this when Jesus passed through a village of Samaritans. One of the villages actually didn't want to have anything to do with Jesus. And when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them? Just as Elijah did. That's kind of like, woo, 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 woo. You know, it's a little three, sorry. But he turned and rebuked them and said, you do not know what manner of spirit you are of. For the Son of Man did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. And they went to another village. Jesus didn't come to kill people. He came to save them. When Judas showed up in the Garden of Gethsemane with the troops to have Jesus arrested, Simon Peter, by the way, he's the guy who wrote our letter. Simon Peter, he knows about this. Having a sword, he drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. That's showing him. The servant's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to Peter, put your sword into the sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me? Don't be cutting people's ears off. Don't be bonking them on the head. Don't try to come up with a worse retort than they've made to you, but to give a blessing. Jesus said, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, that's this, and do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. So blessing others isn't just about prayers, but it's about doing good to other people as well. And he says in verse 9, you do this that you may inherit a blessing. God's desire is that we be blessed. He wants to bless you. I remember the first time I heard Chuck talk about this, Pastor Chuck used to say that he would get it, first thing he does when he gets up in the morning is he says, okay, God, here I am. Bless me, Lord. And I used to think, I remember when I first heard that, it's like, man, he's got a lot of nerve. How can you dare do that? No, God desires to bless us. He loves you. He wants to bless you. That we should inherit a blessing. Peter's going to share with us now where he's learned these principles. Everything that we just talked about, he learns them from Psalm 34, verses 12 through 16. This is his footnotes at the end of his paper, telling you the source material. And it's Psalm 34, verses 12 through 16. Who is the man who desires life and loves many days that he may see good? That means the man who wants to be blessed, the man who wants to be blessed, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous and his ears are open to their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. This is his source material. Do you see all the stuff we talked about kind of woven through this in Psalm 34? He said in our verse 10, for he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. It says, he who would love life. If you're a person who wants to love life and see good days, how many of you is that? 3, 4, 5. Okay, we should all have our hands up. Then he says, be careful how you speak. Be careful how you speak. When you are reviled, back in our verse 9, when you're reviled, don't revile back. Don't revile back. And don't try to deceive people. Verse 11, he says, let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. So if you're a person that wants to love life and see good days, then he says, do good. Do good. That's some of the things we've been talking about. Do good to other people, not bad. Do good. And he says, seek peace with others. Paul writes in Romans 12:18, if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Now see, the truth is, you're not going to be able to be at peace with everybody, because it takes two people. But as far as that is dependent on us, we need to do our part to be at peace with people. We should give peace a chance. Verse 12, for the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. I like that. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous. This is how we inherit the blessing. We learn to do these kinds of things. And I'm going to call this last lesson the blessed life. The blessed life. In verse 9, this is what was our inheritance. This is what is part of God's last will and testament, inheritance. He has this written, this line that has your name on it, says, this is what he wants for you. The eyes of the Lord is on the righteous. Now, when we talk about his eyes being on the righteous, we could say that our righteousness comes from trusting in Jesus. Totally correct. Absolutely correct theologically. There's truth to that. But when you look at the quote, he's quoting from David. In our verses 10 and 11, there are five things that we are commanded to do. In the Greek, we call these imperatives. Five things that we are commanded to do. We're supposed to refrain your mouth from spouting out evil or deceit. We're supposed to turn away from evil. We're supposed to do good, seek peace, and pursue it. And these same commands were kind of fleshed out back in verses 8 and 9 when Peter tells us to learn unity, compassion, love, etc. Now please don't misunderstand me. Our salvation comes from the grace of God. Our salvation comes from the grace of God when we place our trust in Jesus. He died for my sins. I trust him. That's how we are saved. But there are additional blessings, beloved, that come when we learn to walk the path of obedience. Some people think, well, I got my fire insurance. I'm saved. Who cares how I live? You know what? God cares how you live. Because God wants to pour blessings on you. Not things that you've earned, but because you're in the path. You're in the right way. You're doing things the right way. In this last phrase, this last verse, the eyes of the Lord and such like this, we read about eyes, ears, face, and we're talking about blessing. We're talking about blessing. I think of the blessing that Aaron, the priest, was commanded to speak over the children of Israel. And you get everything about God's face in here. It's in Numbers chapter 6, verse 24 through 26. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance, his smile upon you and give you peace. It's the blessing, God's face, his blessing. We might pray these words in number 6 for ourselves when we ask for God's blessing. I often do. I'll pray this. I pray that God would bless me and keep me. I pray that he'd make his face shine on me and be gracious to me. I pray that he would lift up his countenance on me and give me peace. I may pray that for other people, that I want God to bless. It's good to do that. But let's remember to put David's spin on getting God's face on you. It's connected to this life of obedience, which is connected to blessing. Now, I'm going to play a clip for you. That after I set it up, this may remind you of the Christmas gatherings you will be going to, even though there's nothing in it about Christmas or gatherings. You may not be familiar with these movies, the Avenger movies, Marvel Universe, Avenger movies. So let me just set this up for you. You're going to see something about the main event. It's going to be a battle, and it's going to be between two people, Thor, who's a good guy, and Hulk, who's a good guy. In fact, they're friends, and yet you're going to see them fighting each other. Kind of surprises one of them. It kind of reminds me of what some of us might be facing at Christmas dinner.
Hey! Hey! We know each other! He's a friend from work!
You were dead.
There's so much has happened since I last saw you. I lost my hammer, like yesterday, so that's still pretty fresh. Loki's alive. Can you believe it? He's up there. Loki, look who it is. Oh, Banner, I never thought I would say this, but I'm happy to see you. Banner! Hey, Banner!
No Banner, only Hulk!
What are you doing?
It's me! Oh.
Crazy, I don't want to hurt you.
Okay. So, Christmas is in a couple of days. Some of you are going to be spending time with family and friends. And maybe you're not quite sure what it's going to be like. Is it going to be a dinner with friends? Or is it going to be an epic battle? I know what that's like. When I was 10 years old, my oldest sister went off the deep end. We think later, we kind of think maybe she was bipolar later on. And we never knew which Cheryl was going to show up at the family gatherings. Always was worse on Mother's Day. She always singled my mom out for some reason. Always horrible. Do you have a family like that? Now, I got to tell you, my family nowadays is not like that. And the family gathering we're going to have on Christmas will be fun. We can hardly wait to spend time together. We just love each other so much. But it's not that way for everybody. And some of you aren't sure what you're walking into, correct? You got me? You understand what I'm saying? So, how will you respond when things get difficult? I want to encourage you, if this is you, and this is what you're facing, you pull out 1 Peter, you go over these verses, pull out your notes, meditate on the lessons we've talked about, because this is going to give you something to do. This is going to get you preloaded for a response, for the correct response. For the response for you to receive a blessing, but also to give a blessing. They may not respond at all. They may not like what you're going to say, but this is how people see Jesus in you. Be the one who brings the blessing. Let's stand and pray.